You are listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review Podcast. We find little nuggets, treasures, valuable pieces of gold in the Joe Rogan Experience Podcast and pass them on to you, perhaps expand a little bit. We are not associated with Joe Rogan in any way. Think of us as the Talking Dead to Joe's Walking Dead. Enjoy the show. Podcast.
You're listening to the Joe Rogan Experience Review.
What a bizarre thing we've created.
Now with your host, Adam Thorne.
This might either be the worst podcast or the best one of all time.
One, go.
Enjoy the show.
Hello, guys, and welcome to another episode of the Joe Rogan Experience Review. Joined, as always, by my buddy, Garrett.
What's up, guys? How are you?
You're using the mic on the Apple, right? On
yes, sir. Computer? We got good response on that.
All right,
yeah,
that was
much better response on that one.
Nice, yeah. It's probably easy to use, right? Just talking
to
that.
It's a solid little setup. I'm happy that kind of works better, even though we had to do a little trial and error there. But I'm glad that we found out this is better.
Well, right. It happens. It's not a problem. Quick interesting update. I got a message from Justin Wren this morning on Instagram just thanking us for our sponsorship donations to Fight for the Forgotten. And he was gracious enough to be like, hey, if there's anything you need and let me know and da da da. Like, just a great guy. Like, all around.
That's cool to hear.
Exactly as awesome as I expected him to be. Yeah. Legend. So thank you all for listening, right? Otherwise, we wouldn't have any sponsors and we wouldn't have any money to give to this charity. So I appreciate it. Up this week, we've got Josh Rogan, not Rogan, Rogan. Maddie Matterson. I actually really like that guy towards the end, even though he was just so much energy to start with. But I really got into him.
Just like kind of re-listened to a little bit of the ending story there. That was kind of intense. It made a lot more sense.
Yeah. Right. And then we're ending up with Jonathan Zimmerman, who is a free speech guy. Super interesting. Gentle speaker.
Well-spoken.
Well thought out. Brilliant. All right. So Josh Rogan, reporter, has a very strange Instagram, ramen, noodles, and watches.
Did you go down that rabbit hole? I didn't take a look at it, to tell you the truth.
I had a look at the page. It's quite funny. And what was interesting about it, and it's funny how stuff sticks in your head, like it made me want to go get ramen.
Right. He's pretty passionate about it. I didn't realize he's been a reporter for a long time too, huh?
Yeah, and what an interesting road. Like, started as like the Japanese correspondent at the Pentagon. Becoming kind of like friends with Donald Rumsfeld. Right. I thought that was really interesting. Yeah. And then it opened up a lot of opportunities for him that he just kind of moved in all different directions and just took advantage of. And that's the really cool thing to hear when it comes to like building on your progress. You know, you don't always know where something is start, but if you're like, hey, I kind of like this, let's see where this can go. And
you could just see how he grew as a reporter too. Like he connected a lot of dots too. Like they made reference to Jamie Metzl again, and like just how all this kind of stuff started. And every day just seems like it's starting to unfold. Not to like totally comment on that, but the way he kind of put it in, I don't know. He just talked about it. He wasn't like one sided about it. He kind of just was. They said that he was kind of. It was just weird how. He was commenting how if you were one way, you were a Trump lover, and if you weren't, then you were a Trump hater, and just making reference to those things that had everything to do with politics and the coronavirus, you know?
Yeah, like how polarizing certain ideologies are. Like you believe just one individual thing, and then that makes you a Trumper. Like if you're like, I hate masks, it's like, well, maybe you're super liberal and you hate masks because you just have a breathing issue and you realize wearing them outside is not even yet necessary.
Like I said, the Venice courts reopened today. It's just interesting too, now that what's his name is getting, I think he's trying to get recalled or whatever, Newsom. Now everything's just starting to open up and be completely back to normal. Like,
yeah, like, what a surprise.
It's like, surprise, surprise. And the fact that we've all been, like, stooped this whole time, like, I feel like we called it out pretty early, but the fact that it's gone on this long and now it's, like, all unfolding, just the fact that those basketball courts is open is just a godsend, though. I just told you that here in Venice, those, they've had, like, metal yeah, barriers over the hoop so you can't play. Meanwhile, there's people playing racquetball and kicking soccer balls. I mean, it's just like, what are we doing? But I'm just wanting to say thank you that that's back. I'm pretty stoked on that.
Yeah, I wonder how many lives were saved by blocking up the basketball hoop.
I mean,
zero. All right, so Josh Rogan, how much Adderall do you think that guy was on?
He kept blaming it on the coffee, but I was like, geez, bro, like, slow down a minute. But
yeah, no, I think that was Maddie Madison that was blaming it on the coffee.
Either way,
yeah. But Josh, well, they say, like, doesn't Joe often say that the reporters and writers are, like, Adderall'd out of their right? minds?
I mean,
kind of makes sense when they come on. I'm always listening to be like, I wonder how much Adderall this guy's taking.
I haven't thought of that, but that makes a lot more sense now that you mention it. I mean, I can see that.
I enjoyed the story about that comedian that punched him in the face. I mean, he's a very opinionated person, and I could imagine to some people that makes him quite punchable. The comedian obviously sounded like a complete dirtbag, but like I love that, like, he was holding this pain and frustration for so long and got to throw it out on the podcast to millions and millions of people. I mean, if that guy's career isn't completely squashed now, it's gonna be.
It's funny that you say that, but think about it. Like, any publicity is good publicity these days. I wouldn't even know who that.
I didn't even know who
that guy was until he made reference to him, Dan something or whatever. And Joe was like, "Well, we wouldn't have met had that not occurred." You know what I mean? So it's kind of interesting how things unfold that way. So
yeah. He, like, became infamously famous.
He said that
they jump on to the lab release theory, right? Which I think is getting more traction. But it was interesting that they pointed out the same thing we were talking earlier about everything being politicized. Right. Like, so because Trump said that it could be a thing early on, no one can believe in it or even look at it. And that's kind of
weird.
Like,
it's so
what the speech is like.
Caveman kind of thinking.
Which is terrifying. We should 100% look at where it came from, especially when they're saying that in the wet market, like, the first three people that got it didn't even go there. It's like, hold on. Let's take a look at this.
The truth is not, like, what is the objective anymore, if we've learned. The truth is not, that's just like a byproduct, hopefully. At best. Otherwise, it's just like all propaganda. Like, that's all it is. So,
yeah, I mean, it's charged, right? It seems very charged. And then when he talks about Fauci and what was the gain of function research and how that's kind of linked to things that were happening in the lab, it seems pretty sketchy. Like, I don't know all the ins and outs of this, but when you start to hear that, you're like, okay. One or two things could be happening, right? Obviously, you're going to bring in the person who's most expert at knowing these types of diseases. And then, he probably would also know a lot or be connected to things that do similar research as what the lab did.
Seems like, I think it's called.
Right? So it doesn't need to be a conspiracy in that sense. But at the same time, you're like, how he wouldn't be saying, there's a good chance it came from the lab. It, you know, because maybe that would close his labs down or something like that.
Seems like a little bit of a conflict of interest, I would imagine.
Something, man. It just, I don't know. It makes me suspicious. Yeah. I don't know. But I liked the way this guy was putting it down. Like, it's interesting when you get those reporters that come in that aren't experts in the field of the thing that they're reporting, but in a sense, they're experts at investigative journalism, like gathering information, and they're like detectives. Right. And so they come at it from a different angle, and then it really starts to paint a picture of like what might actually be going on. I mean, we can never be sure, but it's probably the closest right. we ever get to know.
He seemed like he was like very
factual
too. Like he would play both sides, like devil's advocate on the mass. I mean, it was nice to listen to him like play. Like, well, if you're gonna believe this, you don't necessarily have to believe this in regards to like you were saying, one way or another, as far as a Trump,
right. You know? Well, it gives you confidence in the fact that he's at least like tried to understand both right. sides of it before he makes his argument.
That's all you can ask.
That gives you a bit of
confidence.
Yeah,
that's all you can really ask. That's all you can ask out of a reporter, I think. I think that's the main goal, as opposed to like reporting news that's one way or another based on what the narrative is of, I mean, especially of your network at this point. Like if you're CNN, then you're going to say that, you know what I mean? Like that's just coincides, and that's not how it should be. It should just be like, what's the news?
Yeah. It definitely wasn't pro right. China, this podcast, nope. or like what he was saying. I mean, he was having to point out a lot of things and pressures and cover-ups right. and then he also got into kind of like corporate pressure of China, like putting it on Apple, on right. the NBA, fining right. them. Like, and he makes a good point. Like, when you think about it, you're like, what are companies supposed to do? If they were able to kick Nike out for just asking questions about, like, where the materials came from, I mean, that's going to make other companies just shut up immediately.
Yeah, like, that's where all of our profits come from, and that's why we're going to have such... It's interesting, though, because those companies do benefit from those things, so it's like you're trying to play... like some superhero on one side, or at the same time, it's like, no, well, you take advantage of that slave labor. Well, I mean, we all do. Let's just be honest. It's like, I don't know. It's a slippery slope because
we all probably have some products that are made 100%. We don't want to know
probably
how they were made. We're probably speaking on them right now.
I was going to say a vast majority are probably.
We're probably using them directly.
Literally.
To make this podcast.
Well, I mean, the computers, the phones, the everything. There's got to be... Not everything was, like, economically and, like, personally sound when it comes to people doing work, I'm sure.
I did think it was funny when he said that Trump listened directly to the Chinese president about coronavirus. Right. And they were like, it's not a big deal, it'll go away. And that's why Trump told us. I'm just like... Please tell me that wasn't true.
I mean, look at.
I just do not want to believe.
Look at Florida.
That he's just making a phone call and going, "Yeah, we're buddies." No, it's cool. They said it was cool. I'm like, look, we have our own way of finding out information.
The way he was talking about how far fetched it would have been I can't remember the name of the animal. It's some kind of weird animal. He's like, it would have had to travel from here to here without any kind of variant and this, that, and the other. And I was like, that seems like a really far-fetched story if that's going to have to be that. I chopped that up pretty good, but that's, like, you know what I mean? Pendleton?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Oh, that... I don't know. What got me is that they said that they haven't found any other animals in the wild.
That's my point. He's like, there was...
And I'm like, how could it spread so well throughout all of human population, but only like what one bat had it?
Bat? Yeah, that seems like a. I don't know. It all seems like a.
We're way too dumb to know, Garrett, when it comes to this, to be fair. But it makes you think, right? It makes you go, hold on a second. Like, this just doesn't make any. Like, if all the bats were sick or had it, maybe it doesn't kill them. Bats pretty tough. Then I'd be like, okay, yeah. There we go. Came from bats.
Yeah.
The story of that college student was heartbreaking. That one that was like a student here, went to school, went home, and then logged online and immediately was like taken to prison.
Oh, yeah. Dude, the Chinese government is no...
Imagine that happening to
you. No joke over there. That's that's such a weird, like, jungleist. I don't know what the... King of the Jungle kind of thought process. I don't know. There's like certain people that are the heads and they're like, this is how it's going to be.
Well, I mean, that's just an example of, you know, lack of freedom. Like, even when we get frustrated here, you know, which we should do. I think it's great. I think, like, the freest types of countries should always be the ones in some way complaining the most about their freedoms, because they don't want to lose any.
Yeah, that's
because that's the point of it. You've got to keep pushing back, because governments and anything, companies, whatever, they're trying to take them away.
That's a slippery slope. That's slippery.
But there, you just can't
do
anything.
That's a slippery slope nowadays, given the mandates and whatnot, as far as, like, mass stuff. So you want to, like, push back, but you can't really push back, because it's like, if you push back, then you don't care about people, and if you don't care, it's like, this whole narrative, this...
That's it. The world just lost more freedoms than ever. It doesn't matter how you look at it. You can put the word safety on it or whatever, but when it comes
actuality.
To... freedom doesn't always mean you're making the smartest choice. It's like the freedom to choose to not wear your seatbelt. Well, there's a law, and it's saved lives. And you're more likely to die if you don't wear one. But that is a freedom. So, and you have to look at this corona stuff as like, yeah, that took away more freedoms from the world than is
and even Joe
ever been taken
Joe
away.
Joe throughout the process was like, once you give these... it's nice to see it coming back a little bit. And more as time progresses, it seems like things are starting to unfold. I don't, like I said, I don't know how much that relates to, like, the guy getting recalled, but either way, it's still happening. So, because I think once you start comparing the numbers to places that are open, such as Texas, Florida, these other places that have been wide open, and there's not that big of a discrepancy, or even smaller, I think there have been reference to, it's like, what kind of facts do you have here? Like, what are we doing? So, it seems like we're progressing a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, they're coming back until, you know, the next time they try some sort of...
You think that happened? Could that happen again? Like,
Dude, of course. If it happened once, it'd happen again. That's history. Just cause stuff happens again. You got to be real careful.
Yeah.
I mean, there's definitely going to be new viruses. How the hell are we going to deal with them? Is it like mask on during flu season now? Yeah, like, I don't know. We're going to find out. I don't think that we should forget what it was, though. Like, and what happened. Like, I think people need to pay attention to, like, you know, how this went down. And we haven't felt the aftermath of it all. We know that. We haven't got to the point where, you know, the businesses are going to be closing or the restaurants can't properly reopen. There's going to still be a big switch around. It's not like everyone was just waiting to reopen and can. Like, it's not going to work like that.
Yeah.
Who knows, man? It's going to be a while. It's going to be a while before things are normal.
See. Yes, sir.
All right, let's jump to Matty Matterson, the chef. This guy is a wild animal. Hilarious. Lots of energy. Almost, at first, distracting amount of energy, but I think that, like, he has a fan base and people love his shows. I think if I had known who he was, because I started liking him by the end, I would have forgiven him for all of that and just been like, oh, this is how that guy is. But it was a lot to deal with at first.
The same way. Like, I was like, wow. I paused it and I was like, all right, we're just going to give this another shot here. But I would, just because I was like, all right, dude, it's in the morning and I'm like trying to just have my coffee. And then I was like, all right, this is way too much to interpret. But like you said, he grows on you. He actually had some pretty funny jokes too, like throughout the podcast, just like little
yeah.
witty things to say.
He has a great personality for sure. He'd be a blast to work with. So yeah, he had a big drug problem. Is now sober. Has been for a long time. It sounded like his drinking was really what was getting out of hand. The amount that he said that he was drinking, I can only imagine.
And like unreal. Seven.
And then it had a heart attack.
And his sleep.
Yeah,
it was funny.
That's a big wake up call.
Hopefully,
I think somebody said he had a heart attack. Yeah, you'd hope
so,
right? Yeah,
sometimes when you're partying like that, they just look at like that's part of the game. I mean, even when he was saying that he like stood up and put his arms over his head like angel wings to get air in his lungs, I was like, yeah, he had a.
What did he say? Like
cough and jump
up and down.
Yeah,
he had a whole plan for like
he had a way to get rid of it.
He deals
intense.
With this. Yeah, shake off his heart attack.
It's funny. I've known a handful of chefs, and I feel like they've all had. I mean, the ones that I've been like fairly close to. I mean, one of them actually, and he committed suicide years ago, but he, like, I don't want to say it reminded me of him, but he would do these, like, benders like that, too. Like, it's a weird profession. I mean, a lot of people have problems, but it's interesting that chefs have a tendency to lean. I don't want to say all of them, but just the handful that I've known have had, like, wild adventures like that, like drug.
Yeah, they're wild people. The chefs I've known are definitely right. Wild people. It just must go with the type of lifestyle. Maybe the energy you need, maybe the intensity of the job, you know? It's hard to know, but they're all super high energy, like intense in their own way.
They got
the story that he told about when he knew he was an addict, you know, because he was like hiding the drinking and drugs from his friends, like going to different places to do it. And then it would start to kind of make him violent. That's when, and I guess that's when he knew the party was over. And that's an interesting kind of epiphany for him. Or like, well, I mean,
I think he knew that time was coming, because he would always be like, I was the last guy up at the party all the time. And it's like, you know, those guys that are just like, let's keep rolling. Let's keep rolling. As I've gotten older, I've tried to separate myself from those experiences. And not often, I'll just leave it at that. But like, I know those cats, and I could probably be held accountable to be one of those guys from time to time. But you never feel good after that. You never feel good after the fact. You know what I mean? It's like, it's cool to be like, I'm the party guy. And then it's like, the next morning, you're just like in complete regret. You're like, I think we've said this before. No one ever does cocaine. And then the next morning, been like, man, really happy I did cocaine last night. And that's like zero times ever happened. So it's like, you never feel like a great.
Well, it's kind of like a badge of honor, right? To be able to hold your liquor and like party till the end of the party. But at the same time, that comes with its own major problems. And it's the fact that, you will. You'll never like blacking out by 10 and going home. At least you got some sleep. Right. You're the guy that's like, dude, I was out till 4 and then the sun came up and then I continued and now it's noon the next day on a Sunday and I'm back at it, and you're just like, whoa. All right.
Yeah, it's kind of like, I don't know how you're pulling that off, but usually those guys crash hard too, but they'll just like disappear. Yeah.
Well, good for him for cleaning it up. I mean, he did have every excuse in the world for not working out. That story he told that lasted like 5 minutes about why he wasn't
getting in shape. Yeah, he was like, just get to it.
Was...
He's like enough to...
he's just like, don't care. I got
kettlebells in my barn. I'm called Meat Barn, this, that, and the other. He's like, just do it. I don't want to hear about it. Just do it. I love that mentality. I've become so much more on that. Like I don't know what it is, but I like, I don't know. It's just interesting being at the gym frequently, and you're like, you see people constantly on their phones, and I've kind of just become kind of anti towards that, because I did it for so long, like recording what I was doing, and now I'm just like, just fucking do it. You know, in your own. You know in your own head if you did it. You don't have to prove it to anybody else. You'll walk around and know that you did it. You don't have to put it on anything. Just feels better to know. I don't know.
Yeah, and it's like, it's not to be dismissive. Like, life happens, right? It's happening. Like, it gets in the way. It causes you to miss things. Like, that's understandable. But if you keep selling yourself on that story, you're never going to get to it. And that's probably, like, everything that you do. You're like, I'll do this once I've got to this point.
That happens.
It's just like, hold on. These things you got to do all the time. You just got to be doing it. You got to be moving.
It's
Well, he did a bit of jiu-jitsu. Yeah. It sounded like one class. And then they talked some shit about Aikido, which I thought was funny. Some Steven Seagal Aikido. It did look good in those movies, but it does seem pretty useless. No offense, Steven. You're a legend. Under Siege is
When I think of Steven Seagal, I think it might be Under Siege when he walks down that pool hall and like grabs that shirt and puts a pool ball in the shirt and then like twists it up and just starts beating the shit out of people. Have you seen that one? Does that ring a bell?
No.
I don't know. When I think of Steven Seagal, I can't remember the name of that movie, but I just remember him walking down this pool hall and just being his badass with his ponytail. And he just grabs a cue ball and puts it in like a towel and like twists it up and just starts beating people with the cue ball in the towel. It's pretty intense. I don't know.
It's a dope man. I I mean, if you're in a pool, I would grab a pool stick, though, I think. I think that would maybe be more useful. But if you're really good with the sock and the balls.
It was pretty.
My fear would be I'd start swinging them around and the balls would fly out the end. Like the sock was at a hole in it. And then you just left with just a sock. And you get your ass kicked.
Beat people up with a towel sock. Yeah, you're in trouble.
That's it.
What about his... It.
I did not realize Joe had three black belts. I knew he had jiu-jitsu and taekwondo, but I didn't know there was a difference between no-gi, black belt for jiu-jitsu, and
no-gi is just what Eddie Bravo developed. Is that correct?
Well, there was always no-gi, but he specializes in that. And at 10th Planet, they only do no-gi. Maybe at the higher levels, you know, maybe if you're... I don't think they really differentiate at the lower levels. Like, I'm pretty sure I could just be considered still a blue belt if I go to no-gi. Gotcha. But maybe once you get to the higher levels, there's some nuances that are, you know, significantly different. I don't know. I'm not too sure, but I'd never heard of that. So three black belts is about as legit as it gets, though, let's be fair. Kind of showing off.
That's
point.
Like at least 15 years of work, probably, wouldn't you say?
Oh yeah, that's a lot. That's a lot. Well, Joe's been doing it forever, like 35 years of training. That's gonna get you pretty good at something.
Did you hear that story? Did you hear that story? Yeah. I'm sure you did. But whenever they bought that pound of cocaine,
that story was insane. What did they say it took them 2 weeks to do it?
I think
they
said a total of like 5 days, I thought, of just driving. But like the guy got pulled over and his...
No. But once they got it back,
Went through it all in 2 weeks. Yeah, they had this big plan to sell it and become rich drug dealers. And then all of a sudden just did it all in 2 weeks and it was gone. And they had to beg his... funny. His chef's called him in and he's like, what do you do? And he's like... We bought a pound of cocaine and did it all for the past 2 weeks. That's why I haven't been at class. I was honest. That's probably the only thing you could have said in that scenario, because he probably looked like dog shit too, I imagine.
Oh, yeah. And then they let him back in, which is unheard of. And then he quits again.
Doesn't even graduate.
To go join a heavy metal rock band tour. Yeah. And none of it seemed to matter, because he's now a famous chef.
I think that he's living...
What are you supposed to learn from that?
I don't know. I think he was talking about living that punk lifestyle the whole time, so it seems pretty fitting for him, to be honest. It seems like that was what it was supposed to be.
It does make sense, yeah. That guy, he's probably punk first, chef second.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
And then addict.
I was going to make
reference
to that, because it's interesting that he was Mormon, too, and it's like we were talking about how wacky religion was. I was thinking that he mentioned that story about how somebody, I think his sister or something, had a child out of wedlock, so they like came over to like serve her papers. I'm just thinking to myself, what is religion at that point? Like, I'm just like, there's other humans coming to tell you that you've disobeyed God on some friggin' kook religion that you know is made up, and you're doing that. I'm like, what in God's name are you even, like, I mean, no pun intended, but what are you thinking? Like, that's just like so dumb.
Yeah. It's a wild one. But they, in the John Zimmerman podcast, they covered some stuff about Mormons and how they... Well, the first they said they're very nice and relatively inclusive. They like Jewish people. Didn't he say that the first Jewish governor was elected in Utah?
Yeah, that's interesting. And he also made... I thought that was interesting how he said... I can't remember why he said that they wouldn't have gone to Utah, and it's just interesting that they did, because it's like it's just a dead lake there. And I was like, well, yeah, that's right. Utah's not that, like, desirable. I don't know. I mean, Park City is nice.
Well, they would like being run across the country by the army or the government or something. Right. Yeah, and they just gave up at Utah. They were like, it's far enough. They'll probably die here.
Right.
It's not easy to live. And they just settled down and did their thing.
Right.
Got on with it.
John Zimmerman, that guy was a stud. Like, he was easy to listen to.
Yeah, really. Free speech guy, super liberal. And it is interesting what he said, that free speech is almost considered like a conservative value now because of the cancel culture stuff. And it just doesn't make sense. I mean, growing up, I always just felt that free speech really came from the right. left.
Well, that was the narrative.
It was a democratic. Yeah, for sure. That's definitely switched, but it's important. His book is Free Speech and Why You Should Give a Damn. I'd like to read that. I think they would just be important right. to know. Like, have, like, your own concise argument for why it's valuable.
Right.
You know, they talk about the social media yeah. and, like, that kind of censorship. And Joe mentioned that, yeah, all the deplatforming. And Joe mentioned that Jack Dorsey, the like, guy who created Twitter, really thinks that it should be open. And people should say whatever they want. But I guess because the company's so big now, he doesn't make all the rules there.
Yeah, it's an interesting
for whatever reason.
Thing to want to, like, silence people. But Joe did make a good reference. It's like certain things, though, I think they were making reference to, like, hate porn or something like that. And it was like, that's an interesting, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That's a good dichotomy to see, like, what you would think about as far as what should be censored and what shouldn't be. But that it's like, that's almost seems like, I don't know where you draw the line. And it seems like it would just be a consensus. Cause you could certainly make the argument on the other side that you should be able to do it all.
I don't really know how the line should be drawn. I think a lot of it just comes down to educating the next generation. Right. So, like, they say, you know, take the flat earthers, for example. And, like, they wanted to kind of, I guess, remove some of those videos offline because it's a nonsense theory and a lot of people were believing it and blah, blah, blah. But it's like, look, if you're an adult and you want to believe that, yeah. it's okay. But when kids are young and they're learning and they're starting off, it's important to get them the most yes. facts you can. And maybe that's where that porn thing came in, too. It's like, look, if you're an adult and you like watching some really crazy shit, yeah. it's up to you. Like, you're an adult and that's where you're at. But if kids are learning, you know, they're learning to decide, like, what sex is right. and sexuality, and they're watching that as their education, right. That's where
but it you can get watch, confusing. Like, you can watch, I mean, like, beheadings and stuff on YouTube. I never thought of that, but I remember Joe making reference to that. Like, there's stuff that's on YouTube like that. Like, why is that something that somebody needs to see? I don't know. I guess I'm just drawing the.
Is that really on YouTube? Or is it just on the internet?
I might be saying that, but I think that you can probably find anything you're looking for, is what I'm saying. But there's
oh,
but it's
yeah,
a weird
no doubt.
Thing to be like, well, you can't search for that, but you can search for that. And what happens if you're doing research on the subject? And who? I mean, I don't know. There's a variety of things. You know?
That's a good point. Yeah, trying to understand yeah. what it is. You know, in a way, they should err on the side of caution with any type of censorship, for right. sure. And then there probably is some areas that they need to watch yeah. out for. But, you know, just massively controlling speech is not going right. to do it. Like, that's not going to get you there. I like that they said, that one guy said that your retention is way better when you're reading in paper rather than on those Kindle machines. I'd never heard that before. I'd never really liked those Kindles. And I know I read a lot, so it would be, like, way cheaper if I got into them because I could just download books right. and get it. But, you know, I don't know. I guess I'm more old school. I like just turning the pages. And then if the book is good, I like to give the yeah. book to somebody. So there's, like, that part of it. But it kind of makes sense that your retention would be better, maybe. I never really thought about that.
Like, the vast majority of books I listen to at this point, like, I have a handful of books in my closet that I've read a handful of times, but I think that there's a lot that I'd agree with in that statement, because anytime I've read a book, like, cover to cover, I definitely, like, I can reference it much easier, and I feel like I get the material much more ingrained in my head as opposed to reading it on anything. I don't really retain a whole lot on the Kindle either. I don't want to say not retain.
How is your retention with the audio?
Pretty good. Ones? I mean, I have like a library in there too that I just touch on different stuff that I can just kind of draw from that has worked thus far. But I'd say pretty good. Like, I can still reference the books. The if I listen to him, if I listen to him again, I usually listen to him a couple of times because I'm kind of phase out and do different things, but I try and stay up with it. But yeah, I'd say that the best way to retain is by the page for me as well.
Yeah, that's interesting. It's probably a combination, yeah. Right? Of all, it's like try and get the information in, yeah, as best you can. It's too bad you can't just sleep and like play audiobooks. That'd be great. Retain it. If you could just wake up and then you knew the whole story, amazing. Imagine how productive you can make yourself.
That would be amazing. Have you noticed? I know you've been meditating more now. Have you noticed that I've just been doing different like breathing techniques before I go to bed now, and just trying different things out? And I'm definitely trying to separate from my phone before I go to bed, but it's been like a game changer, I think.
Is that helping you sleep?
Much better. Much better. Like, I don't get home. Just trying to meditate.
That's pretty good.
It's weird. Just shut your eyes and try and count down from 1,000 while you're like focusing on your breathing. And I've been asleep by before I get to like 990 every time. Granted, I'm working 9-10 hour days and it's a bit tiring, but at the same time, it's good.
Right? That'll do it for sure. The one thing that John brought up that was something I never really thought about is he goes, don't think of yourself in terms of good and bad at anything that you do, because it like changes the way that, right, you do it. Just do the task, right? Especially, I guess, if you get anxiety, like if you're a kid in school and you're not good at math, like to go into the class and think, I'm not good at this, you know, or you get someone that thinks they're good and then all of a sudden they're up against a hurdle. And they're having a difficult time, and then now they're like beating themselves up because they're like, I should be good at this. Right. Like, what the hell? Instead of just learning whatever the day is. Like, I think about that all the time at jiu-jitsu. Like, you never really feel good at jiu-jitsu, but I don't feel bad at it. I don't really think about it. I just go in and do whatever
the task at hand
we're doing that day. Yeah, and that one kind of brings it out because it's so much more intense than most tasks that you learn. You really don't have a choice. Like, you just got to be there to do it. You're not going to get it right away. And even if you start to, you know, as soon as you go into rolling, chances are you won't be able to pull it off because everyone else just learned the same thing and they know you're going to do it.
Right.
Yeah, cause it humbles you constantly.
That's a good point.
It's brilliant.
That's a good point on that.
Joe, I think, talked about not knowing his dad more in this podcast than any other podcast.
Yeah, it was interesting. It just seemed like he was kind of interviewing Joe on some stuff a little bit.
Yeah, I guess he just wanted to know him a bit better, but it's like you kind of heard in his voice like how it's affected him. Like, it's tough.
It is tough, but I think that he has handled it the best way possible. I think that he said that martial arts helped kind of excitement, like channel that energy, you know. He's just accepted it. It's interesting.
I thought it was interesting that he doesn't want to know him, like, he doesn't hate him, but he's like, I don't need to know him. And obviously he hasn't reached out, which is probably a good thing, because that would be super annoying now that he's so famous and he has like his own family. Like, Joe has like brothers and sisters he doesn't even know. I have two sisters and two brothers I've never met. They're on my dad's family. Yeah, they live like 4 miles away from me. I never met them when I lived in England. It's kind of crazy to think of. I probably ran into him, you know, a few times. And just
4 miles
didn't even
away,
know.
I'm sure you did at some point.
Yeah, that's not far. But it's strange. I guess I just don't think he said
the reason that it was easy for him to just not have the desire to reach out in a lot of ways and was because his dad was just like, he knows what it's like to be a father now, and he could never imagine doing that to his kids. So he's like, I don't need to like associate. But at the same time, the other guy, you think about where people come from and the times of their life, and not to justify, but maybe the dude was just young and was scared and bailed. It's like, you try and hold, who knows? You just paint these pictures in your head of how people are supposed to act, or you think. But
But there still is that though, man. Once you like, when you've had a kid, which Joe has, he looks at them like every day and he's like, yeah, bad things can happen. I could get stressed, like, but they are my priority. Like, he can't even imagine understanding a situation where you wouldn't want to pay attention to that child. And that's rough. And when it was you, and then he said he sits around thinking like one day he's gonna call me, but he never fucking it's probably best that he gave up on that.
It's good that he just like let that go, because that's a rough one to try and rely on other people sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, losing his dad really fucked with him, for sure. And then he talks about the angry young man.
Right.
You know?
It's a thing.
Difficult.
It definitely is. I mean, my parents...
Yeah. I don't know. It was interesting. Like, he doesn't like to open up like that often, but I like that when he was asked, he didn't dodge the question. You know, he went into it as much as he needed to, and then it kind of, you know, moved beyond that. They get into religion kind of at the end, which, I mean, Joe opened up with Jordan Peterson talking about, you know, whether you believe there's a God or not, if you live like there is one, you'll live a better life. What do you think of that? There's something to
What, if I could remember, it's funny, I mean, Jordan Peterson has said that, but if I could remember anything when I was going to church as a kid and like sitting in the big church rather than going to like the little kids class, I remember like verbatim the sermon guy saying that. I mean, this is at like a pretty hardcore Christian church. I mean, they weren't like doing anything bad, but it was definitely a Christian church. And he says that statement, like just blanket statement. Nobody like looked at him silly, but it's just like, that makes the most sense. Like, that makes the most sense of any religion, of anything you want to say. If you live like something, there's an importance to it, and you live like there is something out there, you're going to live a better life. Like, it's just inevitable.
It kind of creates a bit of accountability, because people can get wild. Like, I didn't grow up with any religion, and then I live thousands of miles away from my family that live in England. And it's like, I mean, the things I did were just, I mean, you know, I just did what I wanted.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I was a bad person that was breaking the law all the time and doing a bunch of fucked up shit. But at no point was I thinking, oh, like, I could do something a bit messed up and think, well, I'll just not do that next time. But there's no accountability for me. I seem to have got away with it. Like,
I still think your human nature and your intuition tells you what's right and wrong, though. But at the same time, I hear what you're saying. I think that there's a certain value that if you believe that there's something else out there that, I don't know, man, there's the coincidence idea. Like, it just, that seems so blasé for me. I don't want to believe everything's a coincidence. And I'm not like the woo-woo, but at the same time, I believe that there's a certain impact on how you treat people and how you view the world and how you approach it. And you can impact others.
Oh, yeah. There's definitely something karma. Like, yeah, there is. You can't just be a dick all the time. And even if you're really clever at it and you think you can get away with it, like, you're going to hate yourself. Exactly. You know what you're doing. You know when you're being a dick. There's no reward in that. It doesn't feel good. No, you can probably get away with it for a while. Narcissists do, but they're never really happy people, even though they pretend they are. It's kind of close to that. They end up with, like, the importance of free speech and making it known that, you know, we look at these historical characters, you know, like Martin Luther King and that girl in the high school, the water band, and these different things. And they're seen as, like, heroes. Yet today, the same sorts of people that would support them are trying to shut everyone else up. And it is interesting that, I mean, even Jonathan recognize that their intentions are good. Like, I don't disagree with that either. I think all the cancel culture intention is like pretty good. It just gets wild or falls into the wrong hands, and then people use it as power. And it's like, it would be great for us all to get along better. But at the same time, you know, it is cool that people can run different ideas and not get arrested for it. Even if they're
like
wacky.
Like you said, let them have it. It's like the more emphasis you put on certain words and the more like derogatory you make certain terms, the more power you give them. So it's like you're losing the power by doing that at the same time, you know? So
yeah, that was interesting. That would be interesting. Like, take all the words that really offend people And, like, everyone starts using him.
Well,
like
they talked
nothing.
About that with queer studies, then, even. He's like, it used to be such a bad word to say queer. Now it's like you have, like, queer study departments at colleges and stuff. It's, like, embraced, you know?
So. Yeah. In England, like, way back in the day, like, in, like, the 50s, I think, and before, queer, the original word, just meant odd. It had nothing to do with homosexuals. People would even say, oh, I feel queer. Like, I don't feel well. And then they added it to, like, homosexuals later to kind of point out that that's odd. And then it got stigmatized. So it's like that word has changed.
That makes
quite
sense.
Joe
said.
Yeah. I don't know if they used it like that in the U.S. because they didn't make reference to it in the podcast. So maybe they didn't use it like that.
I always remember we used to play this game as kids called Smear the Queer. And it was just like you'd throw the ball up and then you'd try and run around with the ball, and whoever had the ball was trying to get tackled. I don't know if that was an interesting phrasing for a game, but maybe that was just in Arizona.
Well, yeah, we had some messed up games in the 80s for sure. Right. For sure. It's probably best we don't have those anymore. All right, well, that's the week. Pretty like diverse crowd, a lot of energy, and then kind of chilled out there at the end. But I liked it. I mean, there was a lot of good stories and a lot of good information this week. I enjoyed it. All right, big guy. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Garrett, thanks for joining me
guys.
Always. And until
peace and
next
love.
Week. Later.